It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Nigerians have a new president-elect following hotly contested elections. Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan has conceded defeat following the final results from Saturday's national election to the main opposition leader, former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari. Mr. Jonathan lost his bid for re-election by more than 2 million votes. Lai Mohammed is a spokesman for Mr. Buhari's All Progressives Congress Party.
We are all happy because we are witnessing history. History says that this is the first time in Nigeria that sitting government would be voted out of power using purely democratic means. Before now, when governments are not popular, they either sit tight or they are removed by the military.
Election observers said despite some violence and allegations of voting irregularities, the election was acceptable. The 72-year-old president-elect Buhari, previously a military ruler in the 1980s, who after 20 months was himself deposed in another coup, is to be inaugurated May 29th. Nuclear talks in Switzerland between six world powers and Iran went past a self-imposed midnight Tuesday deadline to reach a framework agreement into Wednesday. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif sounded upbeat after a day-long series of marathon talks Tuesday.
We have accomplished quite a bit, but people needed to get some rest and start over early in the morning and hopefully start the process of drafting tomorrow.
Diplomats say differences that remain include issues such as restricting uranium enrichment research, how fast sanctions against Iran would be lifted, and what to do if Tehran violates the agreement. This is VOA News. German airline Lufthansa Tuesday said the co-pilot who deliberately crashed a jetliner into the French Alps told his flight school back in 2009 he had a serious depressive episode. The carrier says the co-pilot, Andreas Lubitz, sent the note to its flight school when he resumed instruction after an interruption. Lufthansa, owner of the budget airline German Wings that was involved in the March 24 crash that killed all 150 on board, sent the note on to investigators. French prosecutors say Lubitz had suicidal tendencies but appeared to be stable at the time of the crash in a remote part of southeast France. The president of the European Council, Polish diplomat Donald Tusk, on Tuesday said the European Union is prepared to support Tunisia in its fight against extremists.
I commend the Tunisian people in your commitment to democracy and reassure you that the European Union will be next to you every step of the way. The EU and Tunisian authorities are discussing how we can further our cooperation in concrete terms to ensure the safety and security of all our people.
Mr. Tusk spoke in Tunis, where he met Prime Minister Habib Assid and toured the National Bardo Museum, where he laid a wreath, the scene of a March 18th attack by terrorists that killed 21 people, mostly foreign tourists. A key trial of the 2010 bombings in Kampala that killed nearly 80 people have been interrupted following the killing of the chief Ugandan prosecutor, gunned down by assailants on a motorbike this week, followed by her car. The identity of the gunman who killed Joan Kagezi and their motive remains a mystery. The Somali-based militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the 2010 bombings that targeted packed sports bars as fans watch World Cup action. 13 suspects are currently on trial. Uganda has contributed troops in the fight against al-Shabaab in Somalia. The leader of the Islamist-backed government in Tripoli, Omar al-Hassi, was sacked on Tuesday by the parliament in Tripoli. He was appointed in August by lawmakers of the General National Congress, challenged his leadership, demanding his departure amid allegations of misleading comments, exaggerating government revenues, and inability to pay salaries. Fighting continued in the center of the strategic Iraqi city Tikrit Tuesday, even as Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi declared victory in the weeks-long battle to retake the city from the Islamic State group. He said security forces have liberated the southern and western sides of the city and are moving to control its entirety. The government of Myanmar and representatives from 16 major ethnic rebel groups signed a draft ceasefire agreement Tuesday that all sides hope will end decades of fighting. President Thein Sein said it's the first step toward a political dialogue with rebels. UN Special Advisor Vijay Nambiar called the deal a historic and significant achievement. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Opposition candidate General Buhari declares victory in Saturday's Nigeria presidential election.
President Jonathan, the Fed acted like a statesman, wanting the country to be stable and not to be destabilized. He conceded defeat early when the result clearly showed an overwhelming vote for General Muhammadu Buhari.
That's VOA's Peter Clote in Abuja covering the Nigeria election. Northern Nigeria rejoices over Buhari's victory. A PDP elder accuses INEC of favoritism and disrupts vote tally proceedings. Diaspora Nigerians also rejoice at Buhari's victory. And Zambia built houses for its former presidents.
We are still dealing with the issues of bread and butter in this country as a third world country. And to allocate money in the budget to build the houses or a house for a retired president is just not sustainable.
Winter Kabimba is the leader of the opposition Rainbow Party of Zambia, and we'll have a report this morning on the state of Black America. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's Independent Electoral Commission, INEC, on late Tuesday tallied the votes in Borno State, the last of the country's 36 states, and declared opposition candidate and former military ruler General Muhammadu Buhari the winner.
Muhammadu Buhari of APC received 15,424,921 votes. Goodluck Ebele Jonathan of PDP received 12,853,162 votes. That Muhammadu Buhari of APC, having satisfied the requirements of the law and scored the highest number of votes, is hereby declared the winner and is returned elected.
Earlier on Tuesday, President Goodluck Jonathan thanked all Nigerians for the opportunity to lead them as he conceded to General Buhari of the All Progressive Congress Party. Joining us now from Abuja is VOA's Peter Clote, who has been covering the election. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, James.
Thank you again for joining us and a wonderful job in Nigeria. Tell us what the latest now on the election results.
Well, the latest now is that Professor Atahiru Jega, the chairman of the Independent National Electoral Commission, has now tallied all the results from the 36 states with the federal capital, Abuja, and has declared General Muhammadu Buhari the winner of the presidential election of March 28, 2015. This comes hours after incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan telephoned General Muhammadu Buhari to congratulate him for winning the election.
Peter, Buhari won by almost 3 million votes. What do you think went wrong with the PDP and President Jonathan?
Well, a lot of people that we spoke with said that the PDP, you know, had won elections since 1999, and people felt that they needed a change. However, there were those PDP supporters who think that there were some voter irregularities that caused their defeat. The PDP itself, I'm told from officials that I spoke with from the former ruling party, that they're going to present a legal petition to challenge some of the results, especially in the northern part of the country where they said the voter irregularity has happened.
I think President Jonathan may have left that door open because in his statement, he said, I urge those who may feel aggrieved to follow the due process based on our constitution and our electoral laws in seeking redress.
Absolutely. President Jonathan, the Fed acted like a statesman, wanting the country to be stable and not to be destabilized. He conceded defeat early when the result clearly showed an overwhelming vote for General Muhammadu Buhari. They said that his willingness to accept defeat deepens Nigeria's democracy. However, the party on its own planned to go to court to seek redress about voter irregularities they allege caused their defeat.
General Buhari ran his campaign criticizing President Goodluck Jonathan for the president's ineffectiveness in fighting corruption and Boko Haram. So now, what do you think is going to be happening? Is it right to assume that Nigerians and the world will be watching to see what President Buhari will do in these two categories?
Well, President-elect Buhari, before he was elected, I spoke with him, and he said that one of the main things he was going to do is to stabilize Nigeria, to provide adequate security as mandated by the Constitution, and that anybody who has is proven to have stolen funds from the government will have a case to answer because there will be an investigation from a certain period to find out who had committed financial improprieties and who has looted funds from the state.
Peter, thank you very much again for a wonderful job in Nigeria. Thank you for talking with us this morning.
All right. Thank you, James.
That's viewers Peter Clarté in Abuja covering Nigeria's parliamentary and presidential election. Nigeria's second largest city, Kano, erupted on Tuesday in celebration at the news that General Muhammadu Buhari had won Nigeria's presidential election. Chris Stein reports.
Men wearing flowing robes and women with their heads covered lined the streets of Kano, a stronghold for supporters of Muhammadu Buhari and capital of a state that gave the former military ruler more than 1.9 million votes in Saturday and Sunday's voting. That backing was crucial for him to defeat President Goodluck Jonathan. Mr. Jonathan's People's Democratic Party has won every election since Nigeria returned to democracy in 1999. But despite vigorous campaigning, the incumbent president was unable to overcome Mr. Buhari's message of change. Money changer Alfazazi Babadala was one of those celebrating as cars sped by, with passengers hanging out the windows and waving wicker brooms, a symbol of Mr. Buhari's All Progressives Congress.
The change we have seen, we have been targeting all this change for long, but now we have got it now. This is why you see this crowd you have seen. We thank God about the change we have got now.
Mr. Buhari has his work cut out for him, running what is both Africa's most populous country and largest economy. But right now, student Amiro Adadu says all the people of Kano want to do is celebrate.
I think we're going to celebrate from now to tomorrow, maybe even next tomorrow. We're going to celebrate, and celebrate again.
Mr. Buhari's tasks include managing a budget rocked by the declining price of oil, Nigeria's biggest government revenue earner, as well as defeating the Boko Haram insurgency in the northeast. All that will have to be done once the celebrating is over. Chris Stein for VOA News, Kano, Nigeria.
Some members of the ruling People's Democratic Party of Nigeria, the PDP, have accused the Independent National Electoral Commission of bias and favoritism towards the opposition All Progressive Congress Party. One of them is Elder Peter Gosde Orubebe, who on Tuesday disrupted vote tally proceedings at the INEC headquarters. He explains to Peter Clarté why he did it.
We had protests later that we took to the INEC secretariat yesterday, and there was nobody there to receive them. Even the people we met refused to receive the protest later. And that was how we came back here. When Jega was here, we approached him, you know, peacefully and quietly, and say, this is the position of our party. We have brought some protest letters. What do we do? Jega asked his PA to sign for those protest letters, only for us to see in the evening that one girl came and threw the papers at my colleague and said that Jega told her to return the papers, that he was not going to receive them.
Now, when you raised the concerns today, were you satisfied with the way Professor Jega answered your question?
I'm not satisfied. We'll go back to our party and relate to them what we experienced here, and the party will take a decision on what to do.
Some people say that you disrupted the process and shamed Nigerians. How do you react to that?
Well, I think it's unfortunate that people are looking at things from the way they think that is good to their understanding. This is a collation center. All what I did was to call the attention of Jega that you must look into this matter. APC did, you looked into their matter. PDP wrote, why is it I don't want to look into their matter? I call his attention to it. So the process is part of the expectations in the collision center to call the attention of the umpire to do the right thing, and that was what we did.
Some people said accusing him of tribalism, ethnicity, whatever you call it, is unfounded. Do you think your criticisms are justified?
Oh, yes, they are. They are. First, I said it's quite selective. Selective in that he only listened to the APC. He took almost immediate action, set up a committee, and went to Port Harcourt. And I believe that if not because of our reaction now, today we'll still be talking about the result from River State. It was selective. When we said, look into our matter, it didn't go into it. And it was partisan. This is about APC and PDP. It took sides with the APC. APC has started printing results all over since yesterday. And Jaka's attention was called to by the PDP before he even reluctantly made a statement.
That's Elder Peter Gusde Orubebe of the ruling People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte, who is covering the Nigerian election. Today is Wednesday, April 1st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 and a half minutes past the hour. They were not able to vote in their country's presidential and parliamentary elections, but the Nigerian diaspora have been watching developments in their country very closely as they celebrate their newest leader. Viewers Maria Mandialo in Washington spoke to a few of them.
We're so happy right now, and I can't even walk right now.
Olayemi Faluzi is an attorney in the Washington, D.C. area. He says he's overjoyed about the results of his country's presidential election. He told VOA, Nigeria's democracy has really matured this week.
This is amazing. I'm elated right now. we were stuck on TV watching it, following it step by step. This is the beginning of a new era, beginning of a new dawn. Basically, what just happened is monumental. It's a peak in the very fact that for the past 50 years in our history, the opposition party has never won against an incumbent party.
He was supporting neither President Goodluck Jonathan nor President-elect Muhammadu Buhari, but hopes the new leader can address his two concerns.
I'm very ashamed to be a Nigerian in this day and age, in a country that calls itself the giant of Africa, where we do not have a constant electricity. Electricity is... it's like an air that you breathe in. Your economy cannot grow without that. Number two, trying to make a reduction in corruption. It's very hard to get zero corruption. But if we can reduce it, I will consider his administration a successful administration.
Omolola Adeleosho is the executive director and co-founder of Act for Accountability, an organization that's been very active in the fight against finding the missing Chibok girls in Nigeria.
We are excited because it is the showing of what civil society has actually been able to do, of educating people about their voting rights and seeing a large turnout of people who have been glued and also making sure that their votes did count. It's actually the first time we've actually had a televised count of the electoral vote.
She hopes that moving forward, President-elect Buhari can be held accountable to his campaign promises as well.
And actually, I think that the first thing that they need to do is really take a step back and reassess the rescue of the missing Chibok girls and all the individuals that have been kidnapped by Boko Haram.
Yvonne Idahosa is another lawyer in the U.S. She's also an advocate for the rights of women and girls in Nigeria.
My overwhelming sentiment is one of pride. It's comforting to know that Nigerians have been able to do what a lot of people said could not be done in Nigeria, and which is to have the voice of the people heard.
Idahosa had actually supported the only female candidate in the election and hopes that Mr. Buhari, after he assumes power at the end of May, follows through on what he indicated in his platform by focusing on national security and prioritizing the average Nigerian person and not the elite. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Zambia's former justice minister and now leader of the opposition Rainbow Party says it is unsustainable for the country to build houses for its former presidents. Winter Kabimba was reacting to a proposed law in parliament for Zambia to build houses for its estimated 5 former heads of state. 2 Zambian presidents have died in office since 2008, Michael Sata in October of 2014 and Levi Mwanawasa in 2008. Kabimba says it would make sense if the country would build homes for presidents who have served 2 terms. Even that, he said, Zambia, as a poor country, cannot afford the luxury of building houses for its former presidents.
The economic situation for Zambia as a third world country just cannot afford to build the houses for former presidents after they have left office. This is evidenced by the fact that of the 5 presidents that have left office or have died and are due to benefit under that law, only 1 house has been built, meaning that financially the economy of Zambia cannot sustain in a practical manner the implementation of that law. And therefore, we ought to understand, you know, that we are still dealing with the issues of bread and butter in this country as a third world country. And to allocate money in the budget to build the houses or a house for a retired president is just not sustainable.
Is there a condition to your rejection of this bill? That is, can you build a house for some former president who probably has served maybe 2 terms or maybe stay in office for longer? Because Zambia has had now almost 1 president after the other in the last few years.
Well, firstly, the law itself is vague, okay? What is a former president? Who should be deemed to be a former president under that law? Is it a president who has lost elections after 1 term? Is it a president who has gone for 2 terms and is therefore barred under the Constitution to contest again? Is it a president who has been in power or rather in office for 2 months and he dies in office? Is it a president who dies in office after 1 year or after 2 years or after 3 years? So there is a lot of obscurity in terms of that law. And therefore, the main imperative, James, about that law is that financially, economically, it is just not sustainable.
Some people will say you have to encourage your former presidents. Are you saying that Zambia does pay its presidents or former president very well, that they can build houses for themselves?
Well, firstly, the office of president, just like getting into politics, is a voluntary service to the nation. And therefore, if you choose to get into politics and you want to run for president, certainly, you are doing so fundamentally to render a service to the Zambian people. And you do not do so to acquire a $3 million house out of the poor people of this country after you have left office. So that contradiction must be resolved in favor of the people.
Winter Kabimba is the leader of the opposition Rainbow Party of Zambia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The National Urban League has described this year's State of Black America report as a tale of two nations. The group's annual report, released in March, found that under an equality index, African Americans had only 72% parity compared to whites in areas such as education, economics, health, social justice, and civic engagement. It is a gap that educators and students at Brooklyn's Mega Evers College are looking to close. Viewer's Daniela Schreiro reports from the school.
Medgar Evers College, whose student body is nearly 90% black, is filled with hardworking students fulfilling their degree requirements. But unlike their white peers, African Americans overall are statistically much more likely to be unemployed, according to findings from the 2015 State of Black America report by the National Urban League. Despite annual increases in high school graduation and college attendance rates, unemployment figures for blacks are as high as 20% in 7 of the country's largest cities. The current national unemployment rate is 5.5%.
The recession is quote-unquote over, except that the recession is still raging. in many urban communities.
The study links education and joblessness.
Y'all want to talk State of Black America?
Says Urban League President Mark Morial. He points to the 36% national proficiency gap between blacks and whites in math and reading as a major indicator of future inequality.
The United States must close the gaps, must close the achievement gap, must close the job gaps. It is essential to America's economic competitiveness in the 21st century.
Medgar Evers College, which hosted the report's release, is taking proactive steps to make sure graduates are ready for the workplace.
Thank you very much.
President Rudy Crewe.
More and more, we're having everything from career days to a real focus on the networking, if you will, that it takes to basically not just, you know, enter your career, your chosen career, but really get the job that you want.
College senior Shemroy Primo interned with the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office to make himself a more attractive candidate for law schools. He says he was disappointed, but not surprised by the study's finding.
But I mean, as a black man, you know, it's really hard out there, the job market and stuff. And as someone out, you know, I went to high school in Brooklyn, East New York. So I have a lot of friends that are really looking up to me, and they're really proud of me because, you know, I've taken a different route. I went to college. I'm a senior. I'm a rising senior. It's my last semester, and I plan to go to law school.
However, the Urban League study indicates there is still employment bias.
Well, one thing that was troubling is even when a black person and a white person had the same academic background, the unemployment rates seem to still be higher for black Americans. People ask me why, and I think it is the presence of still exclusion and discrimination in the workforce to some extent.
Because of this, Primo says he must work twice as hard to earn a spot in the workplace. Daniela Schreier, VOA News, Brooklyn, New York.
Time now for Daybreak Africa. Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with cricket. Namibia beat Kenya by 80 runs to win the ICC Africa 2020 Championships in Benoni, South Africa on Tuesday. In other matches, Ghana pipped Uganda by 5 runs as Botswana beat Tanzania by 35 runs. At the end of the 5-day round-robin contest, Namibia and Kenya topped the log with 8 points each. Namibia edged Kenya with a superior run rate. Uganda are third with 6 points. Ghana has 4. Botswana 2, while Tanzania lost all their matches and have no points. Consequently, Namibia and Kenya progressed to the 2015 World 2020 qualifiers in Ireland and Scotland. At that tournament, the top 6 teams will advance to the 2016 World 2020 Championships in India. Turning to football, 2 goals scored by winger Odair Fortes and defender Gege in the dying minutes of the first half propelled Cape Verde Islands to a surprise 2-0 triumph over their hosts Portugal in a friendly match played in Estoril on Tuesday. Elsewhere, Tunisia held their hosts China to a 1-1 draw in Nanjing. Ghana and Mali drew 1-1 in Paris, France. Iraq pipped the Democratic Republic of Congo by a solitary goal in Sharjah in the United Arab Emirates, while Burkina Faso edged their hosts Morocco 2-1 in Casablanca. Turning to volleyball, Kenya Pipeline dismissed Algerian defending champions GS Petrolia 25-15, 25-21 and 25-21 in the quarterfinals at the Africa Women's Club Volleyball Championships in Cairo, Egypt on Tuesday. In other quarterfinal action, Egypt's Sham outplayed Uganda's Vision 25-17, 25-10 and 25-10. Tunisia's Carthage outplayed Rwanda's Revenue Authorities in straight sets as Egypt's El Ahli outclassed Cameroon's FAP 25-14, 25-17 and 25-22. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan thanked all Nigerians on Tuesday for the opportunity to lead them as he conceded defeat in this week's presidential election. And that's it for this Wednesday, April 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post-editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Koch, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.